So of all the things that Deep Space Nine could have done, did you think that a follow-up to Mirror Mirror was going to be one of them?
Yes.
Really?
Well, actually, here's the thing. So I used to work with a guy who loved Deep Space Nine and used to ramble about, plot points. And, like, none of them made any sense to me, you know, so I don't remember anything he said.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that, oh, and they go back to the Mirror Universe, you know, was one of them. That said...
So the entire premise of Trek About is a lie, you're saying?
Pretty much.
Okay, that's fair.
That said...
I'm glad you're finally coming clean.
I didn't know anything about, you know, what they did other than, you know, there is an episode that followed. Now, I don't know if they even go back again to it or if they follow that story. Like, I don't know any of that. I don't know if it was just for the one episode or what.
Yeah.
But I didn't know any of the circumstances and, you know, it was still a very... shocking and surprising episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this episode is you know, one of the best of the second season, and I think that, I mean, I'm not going to really spoil anything by saying that they do go back to the Mirror Universe again, because once they kind of, you know, once you find that out, it's like, all right, well, if they do it again, they do it again.
No, no, there is not a big surprise. More that they can do. Yeah, that's...
You know, I don't want to go too much into the, you know, what happens later, but I think that with this episode, the most striking thing about it to me, I don't know if it's the most striking thing about it to you, you know, number one, I believe that this is the first time that Kirk is mentioned by name on Star Trek television, aside from the original series. I don't think that they've actually said his name before
in
TNG.
Huh.
I think they mentioned the Enterprise, you know, Spock, obviously, but they really were sort of like circumspect about Kirk for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, about this episode is that it paints Kirk out to be kind of an idiot.
Yeah. Well, you know... One of the things I thought was very interesting about it is that it was certainly a mirror universe in the original series, but it isn't quite this time. This isn't quite a mirror of, it has its meanwhile just had a branched continuity. You know, that's completely different. You know, I liked that, the original episode Mirror Mirror was just, it's the Federation, but evil, you
right.
know, but dark, you know, and they're, you know, conquering like Klingons, you know. And that was about all of it, but, you know, this is splitting off into its completely own, you know, events in there had their own inertia that were very separate from the events that have been happening, you know, that we've, you know, in the past few series.
Yeah.
I really liked that about it, and I like that circumstances, you know, arrange themselves to, you know, this is obviously very much a Kira episode and very much continuing her journey, you know, that they started in the second season, in the first season, of, you know, how far is too far to, you know, take rebellion, how, you know, what is okay, how can you punish tyrants, you know, without becoming a tyrant yourself, you know, all of those things.
Right.
You know, I think it was frankly a very good choice, you know, for that, because this becomes a way that you can examine these darker versions of these characters without going against who the characters are, if you know what I mean. Like, for example, Odo becomes a... We see... Odo's been saying the entire time, oh, if I could make security, you know, be tighter, you know what I would... Here we have Odo in a place where he's allowed to be exactly that, and we see how he's kind of terrifying and horrible.
Sure.
You know, that... It isn't... You know, Odo turns into a... You know, there is nothing... Odo doesn't need to be redeemed at the end of this episode because it wasn't really him, but still it's been a way to, you know, examine this darker undercurrent of him. We see what Kira is like if she is given complete power over somebody that she wants to get revenge on, and it's not very pretty. You know, we're allowed to explore that facet of her character without, you know, while still, you know, not stepping over that edge, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have issues with the Mirror Universe stuff that I think don't really have anything to do with this episode in particular, and so I won't really talk about them because we'll find that out as we go down the line. I don't know. I mean, this episode, I'm not as interested in the character stuff. I don't see that there's a lot. I mean, I don't know. I don't see that there's a lot of it here. I mean, yeah, it's kind of interesting to see Odo be, you know, the Odo that he really wants to be or whatever. I think it's interesting to see a different version of Garak with some power. But at the end of the day, I don't know that it really says much about the characters. I kind of get the sense that there's a sense in crossover that these characters are almost I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's just almost like it's sort of like fan service or fan fiction.
I don't know. Like, I think it's in a way this is there is a degree to which, and maybe not Kira at this point in the series, but certainly at the beginning of the series, if she could push a button and have all the Cardassians working in their own minds, you know, and she and the Bajorans would have power over, you know, over the Cardassians, she would have done it in a second, because she feels, you know, she felt at least that, you know, abused power must be punished. Now, in this, we have humanity at standing in for the abused power, and we serve Cardassians as an ally. And that's a very disturbing note for her to take. I mean, it's making her kind of, it's clara, I mean, a lot of the Kira, you know, episodes have focused on clarifying exactly what she's up against. I think this episode is, you know, making it the clearest that she's not against the Cardassians. She's against abused power. And she's, you know, she's so horrified by the dark version of herself because, you know, she's gone beyond the realm of justice into tyranny. And she sees how, in a way, easy that is to slip into. I guess this is showing, you know, for Kira, you know, Kira sees this as, you know, I mean, there's that one exchange where, you know, the two of them are pretty much, you know, about to make out. And, you know, Kira's saying, like, look, I'm a little afraid of you. And, you know, Dark Kira says, you know, well, you're afraid of her yourself. I mean, that's, you know, in a way, it's an on-the-nose line. But it is making it clear that, you know, she has this in her. And that she, at the end of the day, Kira doesn't want to be the person who has abusive power. If she does have, she does wish to grab power, but in a way that's responsible. And, you know, her, I see her challenge now becoming, how do I wield power, you know, for people in a non-destructive, non-vengeful way?
I mean, yeah, but I already knew that. I mean, oh, yeah. I don't know that it really says anything all that interesting about Kira. I mean, at its heart, this is still Star Trek. And so there, I mean, I don't really get the sense that Kira was ever interested in abusive power. I mean, I don't even know where you're getting that from. And I guess to me, it's, I don't know. I just feel like the episode is interesting in what it reveals about Kira's growth as a character. Mm. But seeing the dark mirror version of herself, I don't think really informs anything about who she is or even what she's really thinking about. You know, I'm struck by the scene, you know, early on in the episode with the two Kiras in the office. And you know, Kira is obviously playing intending Kira, and she knows how to play Kira because they are the same person to a large degree. I think that, you know, the show is arguing that there are personality characteristics that are inherent that could go many different ways depending on the environment in which you're raised. But I also think that the version of Kira that's in this episode is very different from the Kira that we met at the beginning of the series, because, of course, I think that one of the things that Kira says in this episode is when she says, oh, I would really like to, you know, learn from you about how you do this or whatever, you know, Bajor could become stronger and blah, blah, blah. I think that Kira in this episode has been much more, you know, influenced by the Federation than Kira was a year and a half ago. And so I kind of feel like if this episode had happened in, you know, episode 2 of season 1, she probably would have been much more interested in learning from intending Kira.
Yeah, I think at the beginning, she just simply sees, you know, herself ordering a Cardassian around and, you know, getting listened to. And, you know, I think her saying, you know, well, I can learn from you, you know, is just a little bit of starstruck. You know, she just thinks Dark Kira is really cool. And then after spending 5-10 minutes with her, she realizes...
See, I totally disagree with you. I think she's playing her. Like, I really do think that at this point in the series, Kira is more of a Federation person than she thinks she is. And
I mean, it's clear that she... I mean, I will say by the end of that conversation, if she isn't 100%, you know, playing, you know, Dark Kira and, you know, knows what, you know... She, you know, if she hasn't realized that by the beginning, she's definitely there by the end of that, you know.
Yeah.
I think we will at least agree on that.
Well, you know, but I think that you know, you're forgetting, of course, that the first thing that intending Kira does is take Bashir off to be a slave in the mine for the ore processing.
That's true.
I mean, there are things that Kira already knows about this situation that are not great. And so, you know, I think it's kind of a disservice to Kira's character to say that she wants to learn from intending Kira. You know,
I think that there's... It did seem like a weird line, I will say.
Yeah, well, that's why I think that she's playing her in a sense. I mean, I don't think that she really means that, you know. I mean, there's no way to know for sure either way, but I just look at the way that the character has developed over the past two seasons, and I see a character that, you know, certainly she has problems with the Federation, and I think that, you know, especially in the Maquis where she called the Federation naive, you know, she definitely thinks that there are things about the Federation that are weak or don't make sense or whatever, but I also think that she realizes that there are things about the Federation that are good.
Yeah.
And she is influenced by them, of course, because she's working alongside them.
I think we've said that.
And I also think,
point,
frankly,
you know,
that she sees a universe where the Federation doesn't exist and it goes, what the fuck is this? You know, this isn't a great place.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you say about the Federation, whether they're naive or not, they, you know, whether they're paternalistic or not, and these are all valid criticisms of the Federation that the series is definitely starting to make, I think Kira realizes that they're at least trying to be benevolent about it. You know, they're not being tyrannical. They're not trying to, you know, if they're, you know, and so, you know, I, you know, again, we've said, you know, Kira thinks they're the best solution and the least harmful solution, I think, at this point. And it's very clearly said that, you know, Bajor's reason for entering this alliance is in a way to get, you know, strength and revenge against the Terran, you know.
Yeah, army. Yeah. I mean, I think that you know, it's interesting because, you know, some of the backstory about this episode is that, you know, Michael Piller said that he had been pitched, you know, Mirror Universe episodes for a long time.
Yeah.
And he just never wanted to do one because, frankly, he just wasn't that interested, I guess. And the sense that I get is that a lot of the Mirror Universe pitches that he was getting were just extrapolations on Mirror Mirror, whereas this one is very different, of course.
Yeah, again,
you know, this actually
an evil
has
Picard, an evil
Geordi
or whomever.
Which,
yeah,
you know, fine. I mean, I read a novel about that. It's called Dark Mirror. It's great. It has a floating, you know, dolphin person in it. It's fantastic. But, you know, it's not anything that's really illuminating anything about it. I mean, the shock of Mirror Mirror is that this is something that we didn't anticipate and that it's something that the original series could do really well because, of course, morality in the original series was black and white. And I think that's why crossover is kind of interesting because, you know, morality in DS9 is very gray. And so what you get in this episode is Spock, you know, the mirror Spock making all of these pronouncements and sort of totally revamping the Terran Empire, whether or not that's actually possible. You know, I mean, there are certain things about this that you just sort of have to go, well, it's a TV show. and sort of overlook. I mean, you know, all these characters are in the same place and, you know, whatever. But, you know, once all this happens and once Kirk's decision to sort of like influence Dark Spock is complete, and then, of course, the Terran Empire falls and everything is still the same. And so I think that, you know, the show is trying to do something a little subtle in saying, you know, maybe Kirk didn't have all the answers all the time.
And I mean,
and I think that that's something that's, you know, that's pretty
well
different for Star Trek, I think.
And then that does seem to be kind of providing more of a spin and maybe even foreshadowing some of the atmosphere of this, because at this point, you know, we are some of the entities that we've dealt with, well, you know, the Cardassians mostly, are not going to listen to, well, we'll just be nice and righteous and eventually, you know, the right thing will happen. You know, that worked for Kirk. That worked for, you know, we're seeing that just naive, you know, piece without a stick to back it up in a way, collapsed an empire and caused this, you know, dark version of, you know, what we have now. So, yeah, the Federation can't just necessarily be nice to the Cardassians all the time or they will get walked over just as easily as, you know, they got walked over here. There are factions in Bajor that would be happy to topple the Federation if they could. While at this point, you know, them joining the Cardassians, you're
it's
making
a little bit of a stretch, I think.
Maybe. Maybe not topple, but I mean, we saw in, you know, the Circle episodes that they certainly wanted the Federation out of there. It's not.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's not that far of a stretch to see a more overbearing version of the Federation engendering, you know, more hostility.
Well, yeah, I think so. And I think that's kind of, you know, one of the points of the episode, of course, is that, you know, the context with crossover, I think, is interesting because they do have to sort of recap the events of Mirror Mirror for people that have never seen it. And, you know, I don't know. I guess for me, you know, I guess this is one of those episodes that we look at very differently because I'm interested in this as a commentary on Star Trek and you're more interested in this as a character exploration of Kira.
Yeah.
Which is fair. But I think that, you know, this is what DS9 does more and more of, is it is a commentary on Star Trek.
Yes.
And, you know, it is sort of, it's not criticizing Star Trek necessarily, but I think it is asking some hard questions about it. And this is maybe one of the first times that it's doing that. I mean, other episodes, of course, do that as well. But, you know, again, I just have to go back to the idea that, you know, in the original series, Kirk was always, I mean, he was always right, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, he never fucked up. He always solved the problem. And then, of course, here you have Deep Space Nine 30 years later coming back and saying, actually, Kirk fucked up, and he fucked up really badly.
Well, that would and, be, you know, that's the whole Wrath of Khan. That's the whole Star Trek VI. That's the whole a lot of TNG, you know.
Yeah.
You know, fixing this is not necessarily the end, and there will be ramifications, you know. And in a way, that's, you know, that's the whole purpose of the Prime Directive is, you know, well, one of the interpretations of the Prime Directive that we've seen a few times in the franchise is that, you know, you take a hands-off approach because you have no idea what consequences are going to have. I mean, you know, you would never talk to it's warp is pretty much the kind of one of the things for first contact or
yeah,
you know. So, you know, you consider a pre-warp society to be hands-off because they don't know about this and, you know, you're going to fuck something up by touching this ecosystem. Let them get to that point itself.
Right,
well,
right.
In a way, by altering the mirror universe, that's a very big Prime Directive breach. And Prime Directive breaches don't usually go, you know, unpunished so easily. You know, they have consequences. And this is a very unforeseen series of consequences, and one which, you know, take a good 100 or so years of history, you know.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's interesting to me because, you know, one of the things that I thought was really intriguing about the backstory of this episode is the writers got into this idea because they sort of hit upon the idea that, you know, there's kind of a, I mean, I don't know that it's really that clear in the episode, but this is, in a sense, supposed to be some sort of Roman Empire allegory, you know, because the barbarians at the gate and, you know, all that kind of stuff. The barbarians at the gate, of course, being the Cardassians and the Klingons. And one of the things that they said with this episode is that once they figured out that, you know, empires generally aren't harsh for no reason, like there's usually a reason why empires are terrible, that they kind of hit upon the idea of, well, the universe is horrible to some degree. And so the Terran Empire reforming and becoming more like the Federation actually doesn't solve the problem because the Cardassians and the Klingons are just going to swoop in and destroy everything, which I think is kind of an interesting way to look at it. And I think that, you know, the mirror universe being less a mirror universe in the sense of, oh, we've got the Federation and the evil Federation, but more mirror universe in the sense of here's a universe that is, you know, generally okay, and here's one that is deeply sick or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What you get is you kind of get this nice mixture of the two things. I mean, I guess, you know, part of the, you know, part of the problem with the episode, I think a little bit, is that it doesn't necessarily, I think it could have done with fewer DS9 characters. Like, I don't really know.
That's fair.
I don't really know what Sisko adds to the plot. He just seems kind of there because he's the main character of the show and he has to be there.
And I have to say, I mean, in terms of a special effect, I mean, that they focus this episode, you know, using Kira and Nana Visitor to be one of the stronger actors in the series, you know.
Yeah.
At this, I mean, she's showing off her range in this episode, you know, the you know, there is a very much a connection between, a core of connection between the two, but, you know, Dark Kira is very different. I mean, I like that she portrays her as just on the edge of sanity. I mean, there's something very pitiable in her, you know, because when, I mean, who, is it Sisko or Odo? I don't remember, but no, it's Garak, you know, who's saying, you know.
Three very similar characters.
Yeah. You know, but he says...
No, no, it's the Horta.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm a Horta. I don't know how Hortas talk. When he's saying, you know, of course she trusts you, you know, you're, you know, and he makes it very clear that, you know, Dark Kira is just surrounded by kind of enemies and she enjoys absolute power. But she's become paranoid about it. And frankly, she is so... makes so many violent orders because, as you said, you know, empires that are nice don't really stay long. You know, she's wielding that power. She's only managed to keep her position by, frankly, getting everybody terrified of her.
Well, yeah, and I think that that's why she reacts so strongly to our Kira, you know, basically violating her, because she feels like, I think that's a good point, that, you know, in the same way that the Mirror Universe Enterprise crew had enemies everywhere, and obviously, you know, if you remember back from Mirror Mirror, they said that they got promoted by murdering their superiors and all kinds of horrible things, that Kira is in a similar situation where she can't trust Garak. She can't trust anybody that's around her. And so here is this other person that is basically her that she feels like she can trust because it is her. And then, of course, when she realizes that Kira is not her pet, Kira is actually a different person, and she is going against her and running away from her, that she does. I mean, that's also why she feels that way when she finds out that Kira has trying to get a transporter and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I mean, she almost seems, in that she thinks that, you know, Kira would just be by her side, and, you know, the two of them would be the same person in two bodies, basically.
Right. And I think that's why, you know, that scene where Kira says, oh, you should have just come to talk to me if you wanted a transport. It's almost parental. You know, it's like she's a mother telling her child that she's doing the wrong thing, and you could have just come to me and tell me. Now, I don't necessarily think that that's actually what would have happened, but I think that you know, the intendant feels more benevolent than she thinks she's more benevolent than she actually
is. And again, she doesn't seem to, you know, again, she thinks the idea of Kira wanting out is crazy, because, you know, it's evil Kira's fondest wish that she have herself by her side. So why wouldn't it be real Kira's fondest wish to have the same? You know, she thinks that they'll react like long lost twins.
And I also, you know, I do think it does say a little bit about the differences between our Kira and the Intendant, because, of course, you know, the Intendant is much more egotistical and full of herself than our Kira.
Well, again, she has to be, because...
Oh, yeah, sure, I'm not...
All she is her title, you know, that's right. She's, again, surrounded by enemies, you know. If there is a revolt, she's going to be the biggest target, so she has to think of herself as this, you know, larger than life.
But I also think, you know, one of the subtexts of the episode is, you know, I do sense a little bit of sexism in the episode as well. And I do sense a bit of, you know, Kira, you know, Nana Visitor plays the Intendant in a much more sexual manner than she does our Kira. You know, she's walking, swaying her hips, and, you know, she's being very sultry and, you know, leaning over all the time and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Very vampy in a way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good term for it. And that kind of tells me that, you know, perhaps, you know, the Cardassian-Klingon alliance in the Mirror Universe is not necessary. It's basically, it's harder to be a woman, you know. And so I think that that's also some of it as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we haven't seen too many Cardassian women. There have been a couple, but, you know, they haven't been... You know, there's no one, you know, that's been characterized as much as a Gul Dukat or, you know, a Garak or even any of the kind of guest Klingons we've seen. But we've seen plenty of Klingon women, and they are all usually fairly vampy. I mean, the Duras sisters, you know, they're extraordinarily dangerously sexual in a lot of ways. Now, part of that is because of how, you know, we've been told that Klingon sex practices are, you know, very, have a lot of.
And those. I don't really want to think about them.
I'm fine with that. But yeah, I mean, she is, that kind of vampish behavior is done for intimidation. It's using one's sexuality in order to deflect sexual attention, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, exactly.
She, you know, as sexual as Dark Kira is acting, you can't think of her as an attainable fantasy because you're so terrified of her. She'll kill you before you can even, you know, think about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how, you know, again, that, you know, she does a very, you know, showing off range, she does a very good job of communicating all of that with that. But, you know, yeah, I don't think she is having the easiest time in any way. She's just kind of, it's never really explained really why it's her that gets this particular position in a way.
I don't think it matters.
But I think it does, in the sense that it almost feels like she just kind of wound up there, like through a series of weird bureaucrat. You know, she's in her position on DS9 through a series of, in a way, weird bureaucratic decisions, you know. I can see her being made the intendant the same way. You know, it's not like she has any, you know, inherited power or was voted in, you know, anything like that.
Well, it also, frankly, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that Tarek Nor is even there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cardassians build it because they needed a base of operations or something, and I don't even know why they build it. And it's like,
I mean, it's a mining station, and there, like, is still mining going on that, but maybe they're not strip mining Bajor. Maybe they're just more efficiently using the resources on it.
I just think that, you know, the less you think about that kind of stuff, the better, because it really make a whole lot of sense that it's there. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that they're using it to process, or it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that they're bringing Terrans there. I mean, it's orbiting Bajor. It's not orbiting Earth. I don't know. It's just like, you know, and so that's why I kind of find questions of, you know, why are these characters in the places they are in the Mirror Universe? It's like, well, they're there because they're actors and they need to be there. You know, like, it's just kind of, I mean, you know, why is Garak there? Why is Odo there? Why,
I mean,
is,
again,
Quark,
I
there?
Think that,
why is Sisko there? You know, why is O'Brien there? I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all, you know?
No. And I mean, in terms of the, you know, again, none of the other actors have as much of a difference as they do. You know, Sisko doesn't act that, you know, yes, he's doing something very different than he is now, but,
well, I think he's much more of a jerk. I think he's much more self-serving. I think he's,
yeah, but I mean,
he's meaner.
Yes, and all of those things are fair.
He's,
you know, obviously O'Brien is meeker than he is. Obviously Odo's more tyrannical. You know, Garak is much more.
Quark, interestingly, is about the same, only I feel like Quark is probably a bit more fearful.
Yeah.
And, of course, he was dragged off to be murdered, so.
Well, you know.
And Odo gets blown up.
We see that Odo can indeed be killed. That was kind of a half-open question, and now we can see that a phaser blast can do it.
Although, was he killed?
I think, you know, the way that, you know, when they announced, you know, oh, and Odo was killed, you know, like, the episode didn't give me any reason to think that that was a lie in the context that it was mentioned, you know.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff is fine. I mean, it's fun to just murder characters for no reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because you can, you know.
Yeah.
Why not have Odo blow up? You know, we can't do it in the real show, so let's do it here.
But, you know, in a way, that also does add more of a sense of danger to Odo's scenes now, that if we weren't sure if he could be killed or not, well, now he can. So if someone's shooting at him, it won't just go through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he could probably avoid it if he wanted to, but
I don't know. I think if this version of Odo didn't avoid it, our version of Odo might not avoid it either.
I mean, this version of Odo, you know, you have to look at it from the point of view that this version of Odo feels much more
so secure that he's vulnerable.
So that's part of it as well, you know? Yeah, I think, you know, maybe.
I feel like this is a more fun episode than a deep episode in some ways.
In some ways, yeah. But, you know, we've managed to talk about it for almost 30 minutes. So there you go.
That's what we do.
The last thing that I want to mention, and I usually don't mention plot holes on the show because, frankly, who cares? But this one is so egregious, and it's always bothered me that when they're escaping Bajor at the end of the episode and they're suddenly at the wormhole, I think that they probably forgot that Bajor is 3 hours away from the wormhole.
Yeah, and they also the beginning of the episode, they go through the wormhole and they don't see Deep Space Nine right there, and then they realize, like, oh, it's actually orbiting Bajor.
Right.
Yeah, like, so they knew in the episode there was a little bit of space in between.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think they actually would have been able to get away, but, you know, you just gotta kind of go with it, I guess.
You know, Sisko Solo is that good of a pilot.
I guess so.
Yeah. I like that he and, you know, O'Brien go off together into the wild blue yonder, arm in arm.
It's fine. I don't know.
His ship needs room for a putterer.
Well, like I said, there's no mystery that they do revisit the Mirror Universe. So,
okay.
You know, you'll see what happens, maybe.
Cool.
Let's talk about the Collaborator.
Now, this one is a definite deep episode. This is very much a meta plot kind of episode.
You could even say it's Deep Space Nine.
Why would I say that, Eric? Am I stupid all of a sudden?
I'm sorry.
Have I lost my brain like Spock in that episode?
Possibly, I don't know.
This
is a really good episode. It's a really interesting episode. I have questions about it. A lot happens. Well, first off, I think I'm very happy that I no longer have to refer to Vedic Wynn because that was difficult.
Okay.
Because Kai Wynn is just what you say. It's
Yeah,
it's the term for her, And having to stop myself and say Vedic win all the time was difficult. So I'm happy that that's done.
Well, I just remember that there was one episode, you know, where I was saying like, oh, you know, Vedic win, you know, is right behind Vedic Baral. And you're like, no, she has like a very small sect. And I felt like you, you know, were trying to lead me astray. But
no, I actually wasn't trying to lead you astray. And I think that you kind of missed something there.
Okay.
I think that one of the things that's really, really not necessarily true to life, but interesting that the show does in this episode is Wynn was supposed to be a very, very minor.
Yeah.
A very, very minor person in the scheme of things. And I don't mean necessarily that they didn't. Number one, they didn't intend for her to be Kai. Like the writers, you know, Ira Stephen Bear has said that they intended Baryle to be elected as Kai. And they changed it at the last minute because, frankly, where's the drama in that?
Yeah, I would say it's a much more dramatic storyline. It causes a lot more problems.
Exactly. And so when Vedic Wynn is introduced in the first season, she is supposed to be the head of a minor sect. They say that. She has almost no support in the assembly. They say that as well. I was not trying to lead you astray.
No, no, but...
But what I think is interesting about it is that the show... You know, it doesn't really show us what's been going on in the past year.
No, but she's been making so many power grabs.
Exactly. And I think that that's the real point here is that everyone has underestimated her to a large degree.
Yeah.
And so when she does triumph, I mean, we don't know what went on in the assembly. I don't know. There's a lot of questions about this. I mean, you know, as an amateur political nerd, you know, I have a lot of questions about how exactly the Bajoran government works.
Yeah.
Like, they have a provisional government, which is civilian or secular or both, that ostensibly has some sort of legislature and has a prime minister or a leader. I mean, we know all that, but they also have the Kai, who is the head of the Bajoran religion, which apparently is an elected position that everybody votes on?
Well, no. See, my understanding is that, you know, the other Vedics, you know, it's similar to...
No. Vedic Baryle says to Kira in this episode, am I getting your vote?
Oh, shit. Yeah, no, that's true.
So,
I don't... Now, is it possible that it's, you know, Tim teasing his girlfriend a little bit? Like, she doesn't... You know,
maybe, but I don't really get the sense that that would be much of a tease if they didn't actually vote. Like, you know, and so, you know, I just have to go with, you know, they set it up to be some sort of like Catholicism thing with you know, all of the cardinals coming out of the room after the white smoke has come up. And
that's
now
what I thought
was
the thing. And I also figured, you know, what I figured is that, you know, obviously you know, at least, you know, in the U.S., you know, for example, priests are not supposed to tell their, you know, congregations who to vote for. I get the sense that on Bajor, that's not the case. And pretty much like whatever the Vedic's opinions are, you know, people will generally go to and the government generally agrees with the Vedic just because we've been told that the Kai, you know, that Kai Apaka was the only thing preventing the country from civil war. So
planet. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think that number one, you know, I did a little research into this before we, you know, recorded this episode of the show. And I don't see that there was a real world analog to how the Bajoran government is set up. I think that, you know, for me to make sense of it in my own head, you know, and I think it does matter because I think that it really speaks to the problems on Bajor. You know, this isn't just me sort of trying to, you know, be a nerd for 5 minutes because I think that, you know, Kai Wynn getting elected to Wynn getting elected to the Kai ship, I guess, is in of that Bajor is still very divided.
Yeah.
And that someone like Wynn, who is frankly a snake and I don't think is a good person. I mean, she was willing to murder her political rival in the first season. She's willing to you know, be just kind of creepy and weird all the time. And she's a lot smarter than people give her credit for. And I think that in the past year, she has really been doing a lot of maneuvering to get where she is.
I mean, we've seen her. All we've seen is her targeting Vedic Baryle. And yes, because, you know, he's one of the major characters. He has a connection to one of the main characters. We don't know what she's been. She's probably done the same for every single other Vedic in the assembly. Like, she probably at this point has dirt on everybody.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe it's a brand. we can speculate, but either way, it's very clear that whoever is Kai has a ton of power on Bajor, and that's just been
right.
given
and this is what I find really interesting about that, of course, is because this is obviously I don't think there's any question that Bajor is some sort of theocracy, right?
Yeah. Maybe the Kai is like the president, for example, and the, you know, provisional government is the Kong, you know, like maybe it's
well,
even
that
kind
even,
of a thing.
That doesn't even really seem to be the case, though, because you could make the argument, and I'm going to get really technical here, so, you know, you can zone out because Richard doesn't know that much about politics, but
I'm not
saying that to be condescending. It's just, you know, he doesn't. That you could, I guess, make the argument that the Kai is the head of state and the Bajoran prime minister or whatever is the head of government. But then the head of state, usually of a country, doesn't have that much executive authority. And so I'm not really sure. Well, it could be a situation where the Kai is the head of state. And so she doesn't really have much power, but you could make an argument that it's some sort of parliamentary system. And she, in effect, I'm saying she because Wynne is the Kai, but the office of the Kai is akin to the monarchy and a parliamentary monarchy. And so the person who wins the parliamentary elections has to go to the whoever the Kai is to form a government. But it's, you know, but the Kai,
I mean,
obviously has more power than that.
You get the sense if the Kai says, oh, I think there should be a law, this, prime minister, make this happen, you know, then that's what happens, you know.
Yeah, and so it seems to me that maybe that's why people can vote for Kai. But then it also seems like you have to be a member of the Bajoran religion to vote for Kai. But then if the Kai is part of the theocracy, in effect, is every Bajoran a member of the religion? There's a lot of questions about this that I have, and I don't know that I have many answers, but I think it's...
Yeah, like I said, if citizens are voting, the thing's a clusterfuck. If it's just the Vedics who are voting,
it makes
sense.
It could be an electoral college type of situation like it was in the 19th century where people voted for president, but the electoral college may or may not listen to them. I mean, maybe that's what the role of the Vedic assembly is.
Hmm.
You know, like everybody votes for Kai and then they tally the votes and they see who gets it. And the Vedic assembly goes, that's nice, but we really want this person to be Kai. Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, again, I'm not sure that... I don't know. It is confusing as to it.
I think it matters, though, because I think that, you know, I don't know that we necessarily need to figure it out, but I don't think we need to spend a lot of time actually, you know, sketching out the structure of the Bajoran government. Because, I mean, I would like to do that, but I don't think that anybody out there would like that. And if you would, please leave a comment on the post for this episode at trekaboutshow.com because I will join in and we will have a good time. That really what it comes down to is the Bajoran planet is just fucked up and there's so much going on that nobody understands, and this form of government seems very precarious, and I think that you know, the implication is that the Kai has a lot of power right now just because the provisional government doesn't, and the provisional government may not have a lot of legitimacy. You know, there's a lot of issues here.
Yeah.
And you know, because to me it's like I'm watching this episode and they say that the Kai is elected. And, you know, my brain, I'm watching this episode and I immediately jump to, okay, if the Kai is an elected position, why the fuck is Vedic Barile and Vedic Wynne at Deep Space Nine where there's maybe 2,000 voters, like 2 days before the election?
Yeah.
Like, this is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Because that's like the equivalent of the president, you know, going to Alaska 2 days before the election. Like, that's just not going to happen.
No,
but
again,
anyway.
You can read the scene where he's saying, oh, like, you know, on your vote where... You know, she doesn't actually get a vote, but he's, you know, because then they end up talking about her.
Yeah, but I want to put that to bed, though, because I think she gets a vote.
That requires a stretch, yeah. And maybe because she's a major, maybe because she has some kind of, you know.
That, so you're saying that the military gets to
vote?
Yeah,
well, then that's my, that doesn't make sense either.
That's even more fucked up.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, I feel like we're never going to stop having this particular part of this conversation. So this episode, we find out that Kaya Paka made some questionable decisions.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, that was a very, I think they, a lot of what this episode hinges on is that conversation where, you know, when Barile is pretending that he was the one, you know, who was the collaborator, and, you know, he says, what we assume it was Kaiapaka's reasoning that, you know, X number of rebels versus the entire valley, you know, it's a needs of, it's a simple needs of the many and, you know, the needs of the few situation. It's, you know, doing some relativist calculus, you know, and yet, you know, and Kira finds that reasoning horrifying. You know, she thinks that, and, you know, she says, you know, there wasn't there another way? And he kind of just like shakes his head. I mean,
well, that's why I think that scene is really, really intriguing, because, of course, you know, a few episodes ago, Kira was calling the Federation naive. And here is Kira showing that she's naive.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes there aren't better choices. And sometimes, you know, being a leader means that you have to make really terrible choices that have no good options. And I don't know that I like the fact that Kaiapaka was a little dirty. I think that it crunchies the show a little bit more maybe than needs to be. I'm not sure, you know, because I kind of feel like Kaiapaka is not there to defend herself, and it's a little cheap in a way, especially since Kaiapaka is kind of she's a stand-in for a lot of stuff, because of course we only saw her once, and at that point she was a beauteous creature who could do no wrong.
Yeah.
And also it's from a little different version of the show than has become apparent. I think, you know, I think that early on the Kai was just supposed to be the Pope and, you know, a wonderful person. And, you know, she's Kai John Paul II. And, you know,
in season one, nobody thought that, you know, I don't think the sense in season one, if you'd said, well, did Kaiapaka ever betray the Bajor? No, not at all. You know, they, and that this was a season two idea, you know.
But I think it's interesting that you know, I don't know that Kai. I mean, I don't know that you can make the argument that Kaiapaka did betray the Bajorans. You know?
No, and that's, you know, that.
And I think that's one of the interesting things about the episode is that, you know, Kira is obviously framing this as a black and white issue.
Yeah.
Because to Kira, the resistance was right and the Cardassians were wrong. And if you were on the side of the resistance, you were a good person. If you were not, you were a collaborator.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's a powerful word.
I mean, and you know, she talks about how they have this blanket ban on anybody who is, you know, deemed a collaborator, is not allowed on Bajor. Like, I mean, she, I think it's very clear that she represents, you know, the average Bajoran on the streets view of these people. You know, we see somebody who is recognized, you know, by every Bajoran on the station.
Yeah.
Odo just sees him and immediately knows who he is.
Kubus was supposed to be the head of the government during the Cardassian occupation. That's the sense I got, I think.
Yeah, he liaised between the Bajoran government and the... I mean...
I guess it would make sense that the leader of the Bajoran... I forget what they call them, but they're not the provisional government at that point. They're the, you know, occupational government or something. They're basically Vichy France.
Yeah, yeah.
That if he was the leader of that government, that he would liaise with the Cardassians. So that makes sense to me.
And, you know, that is a reality of wartime, you know, in occupation, you know, it's I mean, this episode makes it clear that this is a very difficult and it doesn't have a nice answer, you know, from what we see of, you know, this guy at the beginning, you know, I mean, he just seems a little regretful about what he'd done, but he didn't, you know, he just seems like a middle manager type who didn't have a backbone, you know?
Well, that's the interesting thing I think about the episode is there's this tension between Kira, who has the luxury. I mean, frankly, to believe in black and white issues. And she was not in any way, shape or form in power during the occupation.
Yeah.
And so to her, anybody that was working with or for or whatever the Cardassians is a bad person, is a collaborator, should never be allowed to step foot on Bajor again.
Yeah.
Whereas I think to a real degree, I think this episode at the end is removing maybe the last vestiges of that naivete from her, because Kaiapaka, the person who could do no wrong, the person who she looked up to and loved with so much, you know, I mean, really loved, you know, was a collaborator, you know, and I think she's going to have to reckon with that. I think that Vedic Barayal, another person who she obviously loves, I mean, she tells Odo she loves him,
yeah,
that is, and I don't think it's incidental that that happens in this episode, you know, because that's obviously raising the emotional stakes for the end of the episode when she realizes that Vredic Barayel was covering something up. That those people, that Vredic Barayel and Kaiopaka, not that they're necessarily the adults in the room, but that there's more going on than Kira and her buddies running around murdering Cardassians knew was going on.
Well, you know, because again, Kira's response to the Cardassian here, well, I'm going to grab a gun and I'm going to join, you know, a freedom fighting cell. Someone like Kaiopaka is not going to get a gun and, you know, shoot up the first Cardassian, you know, she sees. So, you know, somebody like the guy who was the head of the government, you know, is frankly, I think, you know, a lot of people who have that kind of a role, you know, if think that they're at least trying to stem as much damage as they could in a way, you know.
Right.
You know, yes, he's signing orders to get to the mines, but somebody else in this would have signed a lot more orders, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he cocked it up as much as he could, you know, even. I mean, that was his decision in a very difficult rock and a hard place situation that where there was no right decision.
And yet at the same time, I think that, you know, to a large degree, the episode is a bit more cynical than that, because I think at the end of the day, Kai Winn doesn't care about any of this.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, we still don't know a lot about her. I think that we obviously know that she's very wily. She's a very good politician. She's very canny. She's not a good person. I think that she's definitely an ends justify the means type of person.
She's a Bajoran Cardassian, frankly.
Yeah, to some degree. But I think that Kai Winn is the type of person, I think, that is more in line with, obviously, the circle, because she was in that. You know, she's willing to use anybody to get where she wants.
But that's it. I don't think
Kai Winn is at the end of the day, I don't get the sense. I mean, maybe you get the sense, but I don't get the sense that Kai Winn cares about anything except herself.
No, I don't. You know, you say Kai Winn was with the circle. You know, I don't think she gave a shit about the circle's agenda, only insofar as it was the one, you know, she is sociopathic in the most, you know, clear sense of that term. All she cares about is her position. It doesn't matter who she's going to step on. She will step on goddamn Kaiopaka in order to get what she wants, if that's going to help her.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the triumph of Kai Winn at the end of the episode is a stark reminder that this is not over. You know, that Bajor is still very, very fucked up.
And I mean, I think back about that, you know, when that conversation in season one, I think it was, where Sisko goes to visit Vedic Barile and he says, like, look, you know, I could go to the Vedic Assembly today and, you know, blow the wad and, you know, that'll be the one favor I can help you. Or when I'm Kai, you know, anything you ask me for will happen. You know, I will make it happen, you know. Again, we know that the Federation we believe, as you know, people who are watching the show, that the Federation is the best hope for Bajor, and Vedic Barayel is going to work very closely. He has an excellent relationship with the Federation. He's fucking the second in command of, you know, Deep Space Nine. He's going to have, you know, they are going to work very closely and very well together, and you know they're going to get all of their goals done, and it's going to be the best thing for Bajor, you know. Vedic Winn.
Their goals are orgasms.
You know, Vedic Winn.
I don't like that relationship.
No? Okay.
I just.
it's weird, but.
I don't know. Vedic Barayel is just like wallpaper to me. Oh, I just.
Listen, I like their relationship because, you know, good for Kira. You know, it's like when your friend gets laid, you know.
I don't know. I just feel like
Just having a good time. It's like, you know, something for as long as this lasts, because I don't think Kira is going to get so caught up in this that she's going to, you know, be unprofessional or whatever. Like, it's just, she deserves a little happiness, and, you know, I don't get it, but, you know, good for her. She's happy.
That's fair.
You know, listen, Bajoran beauty standards are very different than mine.
I'm not saying that Vedic Barayel is not attractive. I don't like his personality.
Listen, you know.
He seems boring to me.
Yes, he's a priest.
He's a Vedic.
Vedic priest. Kai Winn, at this point, knows that Deep Space Nine has her number and is going to do everything she can, just anything that they do. Because, again, remember, she doesn't care about issues. She just cares about herself.
Yeah.
Anything Deep Space Nine wants, she's going to go against just on principle. And as you said, you know, having
been, well, I think that there's something a little bit more to that, which I think is that it's not about Deep Space Nine, but it's about the Federation.
Oh yeah,
and
yes,
I think
that's
that
fair.
Kai Winn undermining what Sisko wants or what Kira wants. You know, if the Federation, if Bajor welcomes the Federation in with open arms, if Bajor becomes a member of the Federation, Winn suddenly loses a lot of her power. And so I think that she puts wrenches in the works because she doesn't want the Federation there. I mean, I really, you know, to a large degree, I think that she realizes that her best shot of whatever being the dictator of Bajor,
yeah, like that
is. I mean, in a certain way, she's a very, you know, two-dimensional character,
yeah,
because she just wants power. But I think that she doesn't want the Federation in there. I think that's pretty clear.
At the same time, I feel like she does make, you know, I don't know. You talk about a Gul Dukat as a survivor. I feel like Kai Winn, if Bajor is on the Federation, will still find a way to keep her little empire. But at the same time, they're not an independent nation. They're not an sovereign planet anymore if they're in the Federation. So she's just...
Well, and frankly, I think that you could make the argument that the Federation letting in Bajor with someone like Kai Winn in a position of ultimate authority would be one of the most cynical things that the show could say.
Yeah, it's fair.
But at the same time, I mean, that we haven't really talked. I mean, Sisko's not in the episode much, but I do like the fact that Sisko goes toe to toe with her. And I think that.
Yeah. And he's like, you know,
that is such a good scene.
I have to say. So I love Kira and Winn scenes because they're just like total like mean girls against each other. And like they're trying to just like, and they're wonderful together. But I love how Sisko's almost gleeful when he's with. You know,
oh, he's having fun.
It made me realize something really interesting. The Q episode. Q was terrible in this series. He didn't fit it at all. He was wonderful as a foil for Picard. You know, again, the two actors had really good chemistry, but they could, you know, they were foils in that, you know, Picard is pure, you know, law and Q is pure chaos. But he looks very silly in this show. Sisko does really well when he's faced off against Gul Dukat or Kai Winn.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Somebody who is a lot more subtle, someone who's a lot more plotsy plansy. Because let's face it, you know, Q was never subtle. Q had an agenda, but he was not what you would call a plotter. You know.
Well, and I think that also I'm with you, and I think that's a really interesting comparison. But the other thing, of course, about Q is that at the end of the day, he doesn't really have. I mean, Sisko's reaction to Q to me speaks more of a man who's like, I've got real problems here.
Yeah,
will you just stop fucking around.
Yeah, I mean the yeah, it fit with the themes of Next Generation, but Deep Space Nine is a step further than that, and you know. TNG was all life is sacred, you know, and this mission to explore is a good thing, and we can be peaceful, and we can be better, and all of those were great themes. We loved those for their themes, but they are younger, they're a little more adolescent themes than the ones that DS9 is dealing with.
To some degree, yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. But I think that's...
Which does not diminish their importance, I will say that, you know, TNG explored them in increasingly sophisticated ways over the course of the, you know, series. Again, that final episode is not a simple, you know, if it ends with the message that, you know, your life is better for the friends that you have in it, it was a damn good version of that theme.
Yeah, but I also think that you know, Deep Space Nine is able to get there, you know, building on the work that the Next Generation did. I mean, you know, I don't think that Deep Space Nine would be the show at this point that it is, you know, if things like The Drumhead weren't there or things like Chain of Command, you know, as much as we maybe didn't like Chain of Command that much. So that's another piece of it as well. I think that this is what's interesting about Deep Space Nine is that it is building on Star Trek in a way. You know, I don't think that you could argue that The Next Generation was building on TOS in any way,
I think it was. I mean, again...
Yes and no. I think that, yes, it is just because it is Star Trek based on the original series.
But, I mean, the way that it...
It's fleshing out the universe.
The way that it fleshed out the characters. The way that it was about the characters in a way that, you know, original series wasn't.
But I think that that's not really building on the original series. I think that's doing a different thing.
Mm.
You know, I get the sense from... I mean, from my point of view, Deep Space Nine is probably the show that's closest in tone and spirit to the original series of any of the spinoffs. I don't know that you see that now necessarily, but I think that there is.
Yeah, because that doesn't. I don't agree with that, but I don't understand what you mean by it. I guess
what I mean by that is I think, you know, and especially not really in this episode, but I think in other episodes, there's a vibrancy to the characterizations. Mm. There's a sense of whimsy to the show that I think that the Next Generation never really had.
Mm. That's fair.
And it's questioning a lot of what the original series was putting down in a very loving way. And I think you're starting to see that, yeah, especially with episodes like this and crossover.
Oh,
and,
no, this you know. Is, you know, this is taking, if it's taking Star Trek apart, it's doing it because it knows everything about Star Trek and it loves everything about Star Trek and it wants Star Trek to be better.
Yeah, because I think, you know, one of the ways that I always try and sell people into watching Deep Space Nine, and I think it's finally time to break this line out, is, you know, if the Next Generation is about the adventures of people who were formed by paradise, then Deep Space Nine is telling us what the price of that paradise is. Mm. You know, what you need to do to keep that paradise. And something like the Collaborator, I think, is a perfect example of that.
I mean, again, we were talking about last week, you know, how they say, you know, Earth is a utopia, and we're seeing, you know, this treaty, the holes in the treaty come. It's a very short-sighted treaty because it thinks that, you know, everybody's going to want to do the right thing and that there's, you know, nothing, no such thing as scarcity. And, you know, if there's a problem, we can create something to fix it, you know. And, you know, again, I remember that episode where they, in Next Generation with the Native American Indians.
Yeah,
That... You know, that's very much edging against that point that, you know, here is Picard. You know, Picard is – we agree with Picard's morality. We like Picard. Picard generally makes the right decision. He owns up to it when he makes the wrong decision. You know, he's human, but he means the best, you know. And we're seeing him come up against the edges of that. This is actually – this show is more going into, all right, well, now that we know where the edges are, let's go and see what happens when they're broken.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because, yeah, seeing, you know, the Maquis, other than, you know, Ensign Rose's final episode, don't really make sense within the tone of TNG, but they make perfect sense here. It's a little, as you said, it's maybe a little too far, the Maquis and TNG.
Yeah, but I think so. And I think that, you know, well, it's interesting. I mean, just as a little point of trivia, this was the last episode of Deep Space Nine that aired contemporaneously with the original, with the Next Generation.
Okay, so after this point, Next Generation is done?
Yeah, yeah. All Good Things was airing the week after this one, and then Deep Space Nine is it.
Okay.
For like 4 months, but because Voyager started in January of 95.
So when did Ro join the Maquis then?
It was the end. It was the very end. So it was after the Maquis two-parter.
So
we
said Maquis part one, Maquis part two. Then Ro joins the Maquis.
Close,
more or less.
Yeah,
that all took place in the same month. Let's say.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I think that's pretty accurate. So, that's it. And I think that, you know,
I didn't realize that it was that close.
Actually. Yeah, yeah, because Preemptive Strike was, I think, what, the second to last episode of TNG, or the third to last episode of TNG, and then you had All Good Things, and, you know, Deep Space Nine was the 93-94 season, which was their second season. So,
So they're about to detach very much from TNG.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I said a few weeks ago about how Deep Space Nine, you know, is this universe now, basically.
Yeah.
You know, Next Generation is over, and they're
and
doing,
Voyager is a completely, you know.
Yeah, and Voyager's at the other end of the galaxy.
We're dealing with, you know, two quadrants in, you know, DS9 and a completely third other one.
Right.
And then what about the fourth quadrant? Is that ever really dealt with?
The beta quadrant, I mean, it's there, but, you know, it's not ever really dealt with.
It's just got a bunch of beta fish, and they're like...
The quadrant stuff is interesting. I mean, I don't want to make this episode go much longer than it is now, but I think that the quadrant stuff is, I don't know, it plays a little bit into it, because of course you've got the Alpha Quadrant, which is where most of it is, and you've got the Gamma Quadrant, which is new unexplored territory, and you have the Delta Quadrant, which I think is supposed to be pretty much catty corner on the other end of the galaxy.
Yeah.
So, and that's where Voyager ends up. I mean, I'm not really spoiling.
No,
anything,
I know the basic premise of Voyager.
That's the pilot episode of Voyager. You know, the kind of the basic premise of it.
Yeah.
So. You know, is it? Is
I don't
it,
know if they ever get home or not.
Guess you'll find out in a couple of years.
I hope Tuvok makes it home.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll find out about Tuvok in a couple
of
years.
I can't wait. Listen, you don't know how hard it's been. Like, you know, sometimes I'll go and, you know, look at the like episode descriptions for Voyager, and it'll be like Tuvok finds a mystery, and I'm like, I want to see what
Don't read episode descriptions.
I don't read episode descriptions.
I hope not, because Tuvok does find mysteries sometimes. I'm just saying.
I hope. Does he solve them? Is he competent?
Is Tuvok competent? Well, I'll leave that question alone.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about Tuvok.
But that's all I've ever wanted to do, Eric.
All right. Well, if you have any thoughts about either of the episodes we just discussed, please leave a comment on the post for this episode of the show at trekaboutshow.com. Our social media username is trekaboutshow. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. And you can find us on Instagram.
Can we get a LinkedIn account?
I don't know why we would, but
what about
sure.
A Pinterest board?
We could do that. I mean, if anybody wants us to have a Pinterest board, please let us know.
Every time we're on the internet and we'd be like, that looks really Pinteresting, we can do it.
And as we remind you every week, please leave us a review on iTunes.
Have there been any new reviews, Eric?
Well, funny you say that, Richard.
Really?
We actually got one a couple weeks ago from Mark in Michigan, and it was very nice. He told us that the hosts are fun and their friendship and banter makes for an easy listen. Looking forward to hearing the rest of DS9. And especially Voyager. And Mark, I don't know why, but we'll get there at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're looking forward to it, but...
because of Tuvok. Tuvok's the best.
Of course. So be as cool as Mark in Michigan and leave us a review.
Or as Mitch in Mark Michigan.
Sure. That works. Well, next week we are wrapping up the second season.
Oh, thank God.
Finally.
Like...
felt like a million years long.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about Tribunal and Knock Knock, Q's there. I'm totally fucking with you. Richard just gave me the dirtiest look.
I knew it was fake because that actually made sense as a title.
No, we're talking about Tribunal and the Jem'Hadar. We'll talk to you then.